This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
You guys look forward to it every single week, as much as we do. A conversation with this man, number 21. You know him, you love him. Maybe not as much as Dave Wyman does, but we love this guy. He's with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. He is Paul Moyer. Paul, how are you, man?
I am well. It feels like it's been a few weeks since we've talked, but it's only been a week.
You know what I love doing is when I'm giving you the intro, I like to watch Dave while I do it. Because he just kind of...
just face, making sure you don't go too far.
his face will kind of give that grin like, oh, come on. Come on, that's enough. Oh. But it's always good. Hey, I was asking Dave, and I have a feeling he has the answer to this, so I'll ask you, how do you think Paul Moyer feels about the idea of Julio Jones in a Seahawks uniform? what does Paul think of that? And Dave intimated he might already know that, but for the listeners... What do you think? I don't think it's – A, do you think it's a reality? And then B, what do you think of the idea of him actually being out there on the field with DK and Tyler and Russell?
And C, why do you hate running the ball, Paul?
I don't know if we'd ever run the ball again at that point. Well, I would love to have him. I mean, he's an extremely difficult mismatch, you know, with his size and speed, and I'd love to have him. Is it realistic? Nowadays, everything's realistic. I never thought quarterbacks would be traded in the prime of their career. So I just don't think it will happen because the Seahawks, if we do, they're going to have to remove something. It's going to be, with the salary cap particularly. So I was going through that. I go, well, to bring him on, would you be okay trading DK Metcalf?
No.
Because you've got three wide receivers and, you know, Julio Jones and his salary cap. Would you be okay cutting potentially Bobby Wagner? I started going through the scenarios there. You can't have everything. Would you want him and not re-sign potentially Jamal Adams? Because you just can't have everything in this league. There's just not enough money to go around. But, boy, would I like to have him, and I would hate for him to go to a team in the NFC West. That's what I'm more worried about. So there's a lot of scenarios there. So, yeah, I'd like to see him. I just don't know if the cost is going to make us better.
Yeah, it's funny how the Seahawks, you think, there's no way. I remember we were talking about this, Bob, with Carlos Dunlap. You know, when he wasn't happy in Cincinnati, and, hey, maybe the Seahawks. And I was always like, no way. I don't think that's going to happen. And somehow they're in it. So, yeah, you never know that part. But it's, yeah, it would be... I'm not that afraid of him being in the NFC West, I guess, because look, it's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo throwing him the ball. So, you know, I wouldn't worry that much about it, but it does seem like the Seahawks always find a way to stay competitive and you know what? And if they do this, I don't ever want to hear from Russell again. Okay. I mean, I love Russell and everything, but I mean, come on, man, you went and got him. A lot over the years, they have done a really good job, you know, whether it's Dwayne Brown or Percy Harvin or Jimmy Graham. I feel like they've done a really good job of getting him the players that he needs.
So let me ask you guys this. At some point, you know, DK Metcalf, he's still a couple years away, but at least 1 year from getting some big money. Would you trade DK Metcalf for Julio Jones?
No.
No.
Julio's 32. Boy. He's coming off a year where he played 9 games. He's had lingering injuries that he's played through. So the idea that at 32, going on 33, he's going to get more durable, going to get faster. DK is not even close to his prime yet, whereas I think we've seen as good as Julio is ever going to be, and I think he's still a very big weapon. But, yeah, the idea of trading away somebody who is not even scratching the surface yet versus a guy who's descending as compared to ascending, I'd stick with DK.
Yeah, I think the other thing is just this lack of touchdown production. Julio Jones is a bit of a head scratcher. So there's some negatives there. But, yeah, I mean, would I love to have him? Sure. I just don't think the price of it's going to quite work.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, I was going to ask you about Jared Kelnick, Paul, and I was telling Bob yesterday, like, my rookie year, if it was baseball, I would have got sent down my rookie year. So, you know, you were talking a little bit about confidence and you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, that's kind of what he's going through. I mean, he seems like a very confident kid, but, you know, everybody struggles. And, you know, give us a little bit of a background of, you know, when you struggled and, you know, when you got your confidence.
Yeah, I went to the game Tuesday night, and I was watching Jared, just his demeanor and everything. And I don't know if he's lost confidence. You know, first of all, I think he's incredibly frustrated, and you're starting to see that. And he's an emotional guy anyways. His bat, I mean, you can tell he's going to be a good hitter. But, you know, confidence is a funny thing, and a lot of times that's all it is. And he has the ability. The first time I lost my confidence was my junior year in college at Arizona State. Now, remember, all of us up, you know, through college usually and into the NFL, we haven't faced failure. We don't know what that is. We've always been the best athletes. There's a lot of accolades there. And same thing with Kelnick. You know, you come up here. This is his first time he's really finding adversity and failure. And baseball is a failure sport anyways. So the confidence part is tough to deal with the first time. And it happened to me my junior year. I was my first three games. I just wasn't playing very well. For whatever reason, I got benched. I never started another game the rest of the year. I just couldn't get my confidence back. I was doubting myself. And it took until the off season to where I go, okay, I know I'm good enough. Man, I got nothing to lose. I just need to just go and play my game. Stop thinking about it. Stop worrying about all the failures and competition. And it finally kicked back in. And, you know, that happened a couple of times in the NFL too, where you hit rock bottom, you bounce back. And I think for him, that's where he is. For the first time, he's dealing with failure he's never had to deal with before. And I think you do have to send him down. I know the Mariners are battling that because it's such an emotional, psychological game for these young kids. He's just turned 21. But I think he has to go back just to realize, hey, I've got this. And now you come back to the major leagues, it's more familiar to you again. You know the routine. You can settle back in. There's not as much expectations on you. Because I think the toughest thing for the Mariners right now is, you know, they're 4.5 games back. You know, if they keep hanging in there, you know, at what point do you keep, you know, Jared up just for his sake rather than the team's sake? But as you know, Dave, confidence is, boy, that's the one tough one that most great athletes that have had all the success, just they don't go through.
Yeah, and it's, you know, outwardly, I think he's always going to show confidence. Who knows what he's feeling inside? I mean, you can see the frustration in him forcing it at the plate, and it just, I don't know what good is coming from his presence right now for him or the team. I feel like it's not about, what is he learning right now? He's not adjusting. Things aren't happening for him. If it would be different if they saw him, hey, he's making strides. He's squaring the ball up. He's just a little unlucky right now, but he seems like he's on it. He's on these pitches. He's seems to be going the other way rapidly. So I just don't know what the gain is from keeping him up here. I would give him another week and say, all right, if we don't see a step, something that gives us a reason to believe you're moving in the right direction, we're gonna help you and us and send you down to AAA.
It's pretty sensitive when you think about, you know, the psychology of it. And, you know, we're seeing what's happening with Trammell. I mean, he went down, went right to Utah, didn't take any time off, had nothing to lose. And when he came up at Tuesday, he hits a home run. And I'm going, it just, his demeanor looked different. And I just think that's what has to happen with Kelnick too. He's just got to go down, resettle, find his stroke, come back up. He's got to be successful. But I think psychologically, boy, they've dug themselves a little bit of a hole here. And I hope he finds a way to battle it out.
Hey, Paul, let's talk linebacker. And I know that you are you're a fan of watching the linebackers. KJ, you know, what do you think is going on with him? Are you surprised that he hasn't been offered? And then, I don't know if you saw the Pro Football Focus thing, still outrageous. I wore my Devin White shirt today, Get Live 45, because it had Devin White ranked as like one of the worst linebackers.
It was
in
like
the
a 43.4 grade or something like that.
Yeah. And then, you know, they're all over the place as far as how they're, you know, evaluating players. But, you know, I just thought Jordan Brooks also had a – he had a terrible rating as well.
It was actually better than Devin White.
It was better than Devin White.
Slightly.
It was almost the MVP of the Super Bowl. But as far as the linebackers go, you know, if KJ doesn't come back, you know, if he does, do you trade Cody Barton? How do you see that whole thing shuffling out?
No, I don't think you can trade Cody Barton. He's young. I mean, KJ, if he comes back, and so the first answer to your question, I'm a little surprised because we're now past June 1st. This is when that second wave starts getting signed and, you know, things don't hurt salary caps quite as much when you restructure or extend contracts. And there just hasn't been a lot of activity right now, which I'm a little surprised at. I think this one's a bit of a tough one for the Seahawks, because I think you got Jordan Brooks they're really counting on. You've got Bobby, and I think they're saying just from a salary cap standpoint, you got Cody Barton that can play 50-60% of the snaps. We're in good shape. You know, we got Taylor as well that we can throw out there. So I like them as a group right now. But as far as the Pro Football Focus, Dave, because that one really got my attention, man, they're insane.
They're truly insane.
I had to look up because I really go, who are these people? And I started looking up. They did the one on the linebackers. And the guy who did the article is a guy named Sam Monson. He's an Irish football analyst personality who worked for a core member of Pro Football Focus. He now hosts a bunch of podcasts for them. I'm just reading his bio. Sam received a degree in history and politics from Newcastle University. Okay. Never played NFL football. And now he's their lead analyst for Pro Football Focus. And I go, okay, at least now I can go, now I understand why they're so bad at what they do. Pro Football Focus has lost all credibility for me. Oh, I will never use them as, oh, that's the guy who plays well, because no. They have no clue what's going on. So I'm not using them anymore, Dave, because we know who the best linebackers are. They don't seem to know it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, I'm so curious. I really am. Like, the Sam Monson guy, I really – if I was on Twitter, I think I would contact him and say, I'll fly you out and I want to put on some film and I want to show you some things that you know, what are you looking at? Yeah, it is. It's outrageous. You know, so
Paul's not going to acknowledge them ever again.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I'm not. And again, it's not that you can't be a good analyst if you've never played the game.
Right.
But if this is your lead guy, who, by the way, got a degree in journalism from Dublin Institute of Technology. I'm not saying he's not smart and doesn't understand algorithms and all those other things, you know, artificial intelligence. But somebody still has to input and look at the play and the player and go, good, bad. And at the very end of it, also have, okay, what did my eye test tell me from that game? They don't do that. And again, it's a flawed system. They're making money on it. I get it. Too many people use that as, oh, well, you know, look at our offensive line. They're ranked at the bottom of Pro Football Focus. Good. Good. That's actually a positive moving forward.
You know, it's kind of weird, too, because it's all over the place. One guy that doesn't get a lot of credit, going back to linebackers, is Lavonte David. Lavonte David was drafted a couple spots after Bobby the same year. And his numbers are fantastic. He doesn't have the tackle totals that Bobby has, but he has sacks, forced fumbles, tackles for loss, like twice as many. And so, and they had him ranked pretty high this year. I think he's top five. But then there are some other ones that you just go, they're head scratching.
Well, I'm sure they use some of this, you know, where what's an impactful play. They do that with quarterbacks, you know, is this during, you know, crunch time or when the game's within a 7 points or closer. I just don't know what they take into consideration. I've watched the game and there's times where I've had to question myself, go, am I missing it? I go, they've got one of our guys rated so low or so high, I'm not seeing it. And I'd like to think I understand watching film and if the guy's a good player or not. And there's times that they're completely opposite of what I think. So, and the reason why it bugs me is too many people, particularly on Twitter and everybody, they use that as their go-to. Mm. You know, it's the same thing when the draft happens. We're looking at the draft boards from these other guys who, you know, there's two or three of them. I got two or three of them can't watch all the film like all the scouts do with the Seahawks. And we use that as our, you know, what we make opinions on. So it just kind of weird to me.
Yeah, Paul and I would also like to apologize to all the people that just spent whatever it is, $125 a year to subscribe to Pro Football Focus.
They're going, damn,
but see
just
if
wasted
you can,
my money.
See if you can get your money back.
Do what I do. Use someone else's ID and password.
Ah.
There you
go. Paul, if it's not Julio Jones, would you like to see the Seahawks make a big move? Is a big move necessary? Because what we've seen, you know, just through listeners, texters, people saying, they don't need Julio. Go get Stephon Gilmore. Go get Gilmore. And cornerback certainly is a question. They may have the answers. We're just not sure. We don't know what Witherspoon looks like with this team, and we don't know what, you know, Reed looks like in a full season, and is Trey Flowers going to turn things around, and Trey Brown, the draft pick. I mean, just more questions than answers currently at that spot. So that would make more sense to me. I don't know if it's necessary. What would you think about them making a move like that for Gilmore?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. The cornerback's the one position where experience matters. And he's proven that, you know, he's an exceptional corner. I think the only guy who really got him is DK Metcalf. So he'd probably love to be over here so he didn't ever have to face him again. Bob, you're right. There's other places that are more important right now. It would be a luxury to have Julio Jones. Again, love to have him. I think he's a gamer, one of the great ones of all time. It's just not a necessity right now. We have wide receivers. I think the system that we're bringing in, you know, the ball's definitely going to be spread around a lot more. But as far as where that money goes, we already have, what, $110 million compared to $80 million in a salary cap, or it may not be exactly right on the numbers for this year, but it's about $20 or $30 million more for the offense than the defense. Man, you can't get that far out of whack. I mean, you got to make sure it's in line pretty close to each other with the salary cap and where you spend your money. So, yeah, other places right now. But with all that being said, this year, nothing would surprise me.
Yeah. Hey, did somebody want to bring in the guitar player for Pink Floyd on the team?
Yeah, somebody said David Gilmore.
David, no. Did we say David Gilmore?
No, we said Stephon Gilmore.
Said Stephon Gilmore. Okay.
Gilmore?
Yeah.
Dave Gilmore's
Gilmore.
Too old at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul, there was kind of a funny story with the A's and their minor league system and their cheese sandwiches. It was the most pathetic looking picture. Now, people were trying to, you know, turn it into being really dramatic. I thought that was a little bit much, but, you know, as far as food goes, I remember we used to get on the plane and people would always chant, yeah, Reggie cooked the chicken. Because remember Reggie McKenzie would always bring the chicken on that we would get on the planes, and it was always cold. And if it wasn't good, everybody give Reggie a hard time. But I mean, what's like the worst meal that you've had in your time in the NFL?
Well, when I saw that with the A's, my first thing, I did kind of laugh because I said, well, that kind of looks like, you know, food that you had when you were a little kid, you know. But we didn't get food, Dave.
I know.
I mean, we didn't even get fit. We were in the NFL, and when we were at the facility, we never got breakfast, lunch, dinner. We had to try and go run and get our own food if we could in between meetings. I mean, how times have changed. I remember when I was at Arizona State, we were flying back. I got food poisoning from something they gave us. But when we were with the Seahawks, they gave us cold hamburgers. You know, they would be just sitting on our seats when we got in there, or they'd throw a cold sandwich in there. Now, once the plane got up, we would get a hot meal, you know, like a steak or something. But the food after the game, it was like cold hot dogs. I mean, it was horrible. And so when I saw it, I go, you know, that's what it was like for us way back when. You would like for, obviously, them to treat their employees a little bit better than that, particularly when they are playing, you know, and you're coming, anytime you're traveling, you know, you need to take care of them. But I did laugh because I've had some horrible food as a player, both in the NFL and at a major college. So when I looked at it, I went, I mean, at least it's food.
Yeah, this day and age is what makes it surprising when you look at the way athletes are treated now. I think that's what the Seahawks, for example, I mean, we rave about their facilities. We rave about the kitchen and how they've got a chef on staff who's they could live there. They wake up, have a fresh made breakfast, fresh made lunch, dinner, the whole thing. And then to see in this day and age, there's the A's. With this, and of course, it's the Oakland A's.
Yeah, because they're cheap.
With this cheese sandwich that looks like it was stepped on, and they picked it up off the ground and threw it back in the styrofoam container.
But to Paul's point, the first day of practice for me for the Seahawks, I didn't know I needed to bring my own food. I thought there'd be lunchtime that we could go get something. So that cheese sandwich would have looked pretty good to me.
Yeah, you guys were spending your time at the Fill Your Belly Deli.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, it's the hard part for baseball, you know, particularly minor leaguers, and a lot of them are. You know, they're independently run, right? While the players are through the organization, usually the minor league teams are run independently. So you never know what you're going to get there. But that's kind of a wake-up call. I've always had a problem with what they did to the minor league guys. I mean, it's a tough road. They don't pay them. Travel's brutal. I think it's getting a little better. They're trying to make things more regional. And if they did, I think it would be better. But they, you know, you got to treat these guys right. And it's an investment in your future. Why would you not want to feed these guys the best of the best?
Because you're an Oakland A. You're a bunch of cheap punks. I hate the A's. Can't stand it.
They have always been, it goes way back to Ken Behring's buddies, man. They've never spent money. That's
Paul,
not good.
I'll leave you with this text from the 253. Linebackers can have their pudding before they eat their meat. Another Pink Floyd reference there for you.
Paul, do you get the Pink Floyd? You're not a Pink Floyd fan, are you?
No.
Oh,
no,
so you don't know what that means.
I'm more like an ABBA and...
No. Dancing
Paul,
Queen.
Stop.
I knew it. I knew you were a Dancing Queen fan.
No, Paul. Not
Thank
ABBA.
You. There you go.
All right, Paul. We appreciate it as always. We'll talk next week.
Appreciate it. Have a great night.
There you go. There's Paul Moyer with us. He didn't get that reference.
Yeah,
he
wouldn't have gotten
that.
No, I kind of know, Paul, what he would get, what he wouldn't. And when you started reading that, I was like, this one's for me.
Yeah. 253, that was for Dave.
It was kind of like Jim. Like, Danny and I would sit there and do the, you know, Seinfeld thing. And
right over his head.
He never got a Seinfeld. And you know why he never got a Seinfeld reference is because he couldn't watch Seinfeld. And the reason why? Canned laughter. He couldn't stand the canned laughter. So,
but he'll rave about Undercover Brother. I don't know.
But Paul Moyer will remember a detail about something from, you know, three or four seasons ago, like I do sometimes. But, yeah, I don't think he would have gotten the Pink Floyd.
All right. Well, it was a good text from our texter, so we appreciate that one.
Well done.
All right, coming up, we've got some Kraken insight headed your way. Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us to talk some NFL. So stay tuned for that conversation. But right now we get a chance to talk some hockey. How about that? We were watching yesterday as the draft lottery was going on and they were unveiling team after team after team, and you got down to the final two, and the Kraken had not been displayed yet. We didn't see the logo, and hoping for number one, but they end up with the second overall pick in the upcoming draft. And here to tell us just how great that is, or maybe it's not as great as we think. Who knows? Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times is with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Jeff, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. I'm doing really well. Not as well as the Kraken. You know, they're pretty happy with that number two overall pick.
Yeah.
Is there
an obvious player? I mean, we kept hearing the same name in terms of the number one pick, which I assume Buffalo will go with. But the idea that they've got the second overall pick, is this a deep draft? Is there just a lot of talent out there and they're sure to walk away with somebody that's going to be considered a star in the making?
I think they will walk away with somebody. It's a difficult draft. It's not like you can look at the top 10 and say, oh, this guy slots in here, that guy slots in there. I mean, you really do have five or six guys that have all been debated as a potential number one overall pick for the last, even in the last 4 or 5 weeks. And usually you have a consensus start to form by that. Now, I mean, there is a consensus around Owen Power from the University of Michigan, a defenseman. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy's 6'5". He's huge. He's what you want to take. He's NHL ready from what we hear. You know, and it's possible the Buffalo Sabres will take him. It's highly probable they will take him. But there's also Matthew Beniers, who's a center. And, you know, centers are very valuable as well. And he's a two-way center. He plays very well in both ends, which is a commodity you look for in the NHL. It's a very underrated commodity, I would say. And if you look at if you follow the playoffs right now, and I do, I'm from Montreal, so I follow the Montreal Canadiens closely. I try to follow all the teams closely, but I mean the Canadiens are pulling off the big surprise of the playoffs so far. They knocked off Toronto. They pretty much outplayed Winnipeg last night and beat them. And one of the reasons is Philippe Danault, their centerman. You know, he doesn't score a whole lot of goals. You're not going to find him in the top five in league scoring. But, man, does he ever shut down the other team's top lines. And he did it, you know, he did it to the Austin Matthews line in Toronto. And you know, he did it. He did it last night as well. He takes your top scorers and he renders them useless. And that's a very undervalued commodity. And that's what Beniers brings to the table. So it'll be interesting to see what the Kraken does if the Sabres do take Owen Power at number one, because then they have a choice. You know, are they going to go with a defenseman or are they going to go with a top center who projects very well in the NHL? That should be very interesting.
Hey, Jeff, we got a chance to talk to Ron Francis. What a great guy, the GM, and just seemed like a really good, humble guy. Have you gotten to know him and maybe sort of glean some information of where do you think he might go as far as building his team?
Well, yeah, I asked him that yesterday, and he gave me the old, we're going to take the best player available line, which I hadn't heard in about 5 minutes from some GM in some sport. But, no, I mean, if you look at what Ron Francis was, I mean, he was a great two-way centerman, like I just described. Yeah. You know, as a player, his dad, from the time he was little, his dad, Ronald, taught him the value of being a 200-foot player, playing well on both ends of the ice. And so he favors those kinds of players up front as a forward. So he did, you know, he did talk about the traditional. He's a traditionalist. He does like to build from the middle out. And that man, he mentioned it yesterday, you start with the goalie. But in drafts, you don't really go for goaltenders in the first round. They're very unpredictable. You won't see a lot of teams wasting a high pick on a goalie. So then the next step after that is a defenseman. And if you can get a big towering defenseman, kind of like an Owen Power, 6'5". I mean, Simon Edvinson from Sweden, he's another big guy. You know, the jury's still out on him. You know, there's people that say he could be the next Victor Hedman, could be the next great European defenseman that comes in the NHL. Other people aren't so sure. He didn't play a whole lot of junior this year because of the COVID pandemic over in Sweden. They postponed the league. So it's not really too clear cut. There's a couple of other defensemen there. There's Luke Hughes, a little bit smaller. And Brandon Clark, you know, he's also a little bit smaller than these guys. But, I mean, if you can get a big hulking defenseman, you tend to go with that in the NHL. And that's why Owen Power is usually the consensus number one pick here by a lot of people. So, you know, I would think he would prefer to build out from a big defenseman like that to start with. I've mentioned Brent Clark in the paper today. A lot of it because he's a right-handed shot, and you don't see that as much in the NHL. I think it skews about two-thirds lefty in the NHL. And when you're trying to run a power play or you're trying to coordinate stuff from the point, you need a guy from the right side. And getting a right-handed shot as a defenseman is pretty important. And Brent Clark didn't play a whole lot this year either. The Ontario Hockey League shut down, but he did play for a pro team in Slovakia. Apparently showed very well there, and his advanced analytics show very well as well. And the Kraken's putting a lot of faith in its analytics team to assist them with this call. So that could be interesting. You know, Brent Clark's a guy, a lot of people have him in their top fives, but he's a guy that could move up, could vault up to number two overall if Francis stays on defense. Now, if Owen Power goes to Buffalo, Francis might switch to center. And honestly, a lot of people think Matthew Beniers, who's also from Michigan, there's a lot of Michigan guys in the top 10 this year. They have three of them projected to go top 10. But it's possible that the Michigan guys could go 1-2. You know, you could have Power, and then you could have Beniers at center going to Seattle because he's also seen as a guy that could be NHL ready. And like I say, he's like Francis, you know, good two-way centerman, knows how to play defense as well as quarterback and offense. And so, you know, you look for that in the NHL, and that would be that's right up there with Francis's philosophy of building up the middle.
Hey, Jeff, it seems
that's a long-winded answer.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate it. That was good stuff.
Now you're speaking to hockey novices here at best, so we're learning. It seems like the Golden Knights really set an expectation for an expansion franchise, and I don't know if that's realistic to expect that the Kraken will duplicate the success that the Golden Knights had out of the box. Is that realistic in your mind with the expansion draft coming up? They're going to have the number two overall pick. Would you expect them to be a competitive team, or was that more of an aberration, do you think?
No, I think the rules are designed to make them a competitive team right away. And I've said this to a few people now. I think a realistic expectation for the Kraken is to expect them to make the playoffs in their first year. And I think that's a goal the organization is going to set for itself. I don't think they'll say it out loud because you have to manage expectations. But I don't see any reason why they can't make the playoffs. I mean, you know, sure, they're in tough out here in the Pacific Division, but I do think, and I think that was honestly the Golden Knights' goal their first year, and they got in the playoffs, and they got a little lucky. Let's face it, you need to be a little lucky, too, in the postseason. And as we've seen this year, anything can go. And the NHL, there's so much parity now that if you just get into that postseason, I mean, every team legitimately has a shot at the Stanley Cup. Heck, even the Montreal Canadiens, who are one of the worst playoff teams Montreal's ever had on paper, you know, they have a shot at going to the Cup final. They have a shot at least going to the Final Four right now. Their odds keep improving by the day. And so I think, yeah, is it realistic for the Kraken to expect to go to the Cup final? No, but it is realistic, I think, for them to shoot for the playoffs. And then after that, you never know what can happen.
Jeff, we got about 20 seconds left, but just quickly, when do you think they hire a coach?
Well, he said they're going to hire one by the end of this month. I think they're waiting for Carolina to finish its season because Rod Brindamore's there. Brindamore has been trying to get contract raises for all of his assistants in Carolina. That's one of the holdups of getting a contract there. The owner's not exactly known for paying his supporting cast all that well. It's a relatively new owner, and so we'll see what happens with that. And if Brindamore doesn't want to leave Carolina and come here, and you know, it's still a very long shot at this point, then you know, he's got some backup plans. He's in Las Vegas today, Francis. He's interviewing Rick Tocchet. It's the second interview he's done. Tocchet's girlfriend lives out in Vegas, so Francis flew down there today to interview him there. And, you know, so he's got him back pocket. And I know they talked to Gerard Gallant last year. It's been a while. So you know, he might be drifting out of the fray. But they're waiting for Brendan Moore's season to finish right now in Carolina. Carolina's down 2-0 in their series against Tampa Bay. Doesn't look very good for them right now. So that could be over in a week or two, and we could have our answer fairly quickly.
Jeff Baker, the Seattle Times, dazzling us with hockey insight. We appreciate it, Jeff. Good to talk to you again, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
Yeah, I hope so. It's good talking to you guys again.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care.
There you go. Jeff Baker, the Seattle Times, giving some thoughts on the Kraken, who come away with the number two overall pick in this year's draft. Meanwhile, has Mitch Haniger become too valuable to trade? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Good stuff from Jeff Baker. Hopefully the hockey fans out there appreciate that conversation. As things get closer to the expansion draft, we'll talk about it more often. Maybe John Paul Morosi, our baseball guy, who's a massive hockey fan, will become our hockey guy as well.
You know what? The other thing that we can do, because I was looking up some centermen in the NHL, we can get John Clayton to do some of the pronunciations of these names. Evgeny Kuznetsov.
Yeah.
Anze Kopitar. Elias Pettersson.
Well, here's the problem, is none of us would know if he was doing it incorrectly.
Yeah. So, no, it's an interesting mixture. And you were talking about the couple of players from Michigan in the top 10 that are
yeah,
good.
He's saying they could go 1-2, and I thought typically the best players were, you know,
European
Russian player, I don't know, so
Canadian.
We'll find out. But yeah, having John go through the roster would be great. He'd hit us with some gems.
Reno Giacomoli.
Say that one again.
Reno Giacomoli.
Giacomoli. The other day I swear he was saying Julio Jones.
He was.
Yeah.
Julio.
You know what, though? I shouldn't really talk. I've been known to butcher some names, so, you know, I'm just giving
Clayton
a little
bit
of a hard time.
Did you do one recently? I can't remember if there was one.
Oh, yeah, it was Julio Brown.
Julio Brown. Oh, he just combined names.
Julio Jones and A.J. Brown.
Oh, is that what I did?
Yeah. Mispronunciation that I can't remember.
Okay, maybe not mispronunciation, but just put the wrong guys together.
Yeah, just combined two guys, made them one. That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, Clayton had one, what was it? Tyler Metcalf or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
He put those two together.
He's good at those. It's funny. I hadn't heard this one in a while because I had this sound page of different drops, and that one was on there.
You know, Giacomoli.
But this, we used to end it when I was with Graz of the Middays. This is how we'd end our show every day.
A role play group? What would a role?
Stop! Just stop.
Oh, I hadn't heard that in a while. Still makes me laugh.
I say this a lot, but I don't care. My favorite is still Lofa to Poo Poo. That's still my favorite one.
I don't know where that one is on the sound sheet here.
I don't think he has that. It's ingrained in my mind because I think I spit whatever I had in my mouth all over the microphone when I heard it.
So. Yeah, there's some classics on here. We may have to bring some of these classic drops out. We've talked a bit about this, Mitch Haniger, the idea of him being traded and all that. And I thought Larry Stone, I sent you guys the link to his story last night about Mitch Haniger and the idea of trading him and how unappealing that truly is. And more importantly, I guess the question would be, what would they have to get back in order to appease fans who I think are beginning to realize that's the best player on the team? And he's not an old guy yet. And you don't have an answer in the outfield currently that we know of. You have a bunch of potential answers, as we talked about. But in terms of, I know what I'm getting from this guy in the outfield, Kyle Lewis was the next most certain outfielder you had. He's got the most experience under his belt. You've seen him at this level for a little while, even though he hasn't even played a full season's worth of games. He was the next most experienced guy. Now we've got questions about, A, are we even going to see him again this year, which sounds 50-50 based on the quote from or the soundbite from Jerry DePoto this morning. And then everybody else, Taylor Trammell, we have no idea. Is he gonna become an everyday guy? Is he a star? Kelnick, he's more than likely going to get sent down at some point before we see him as an everyday guy. Or maybe his stay gets prolonged because of the injury. I mean, we don't. To this point, you haven't seen him look like, yeah, that's an outfielder we can count on. Jake Fraley? No. Julio Rodriguez? He's not ready to come up. So you don't have answers out there to where you have that luxury. And if you're expecting to compete next year, which I'm still holding them to, you've put this off long enough. You better, if that means you go out and spend money and bring in proven free agents or you make trades for proven commodities, you better do it, because I think as an organization, the Mariners have tested the patience of this fan base about as far as it can stretch, and have been talking about, well, it's going to be this year we're going to compete. It's going to be that year we're going to compete. I don't think they can afford to go into another season saying, well, you know what, we got set back with all these injuries, which is valid, by the way, absolutely valid, but I think you need to go above and beyond to sort of rectify that and make up for that lost time.
Yeah. Well, and I think keeping Mitch Haniger is part of
that's a huge part of it.
Part of the program.
I don't know that you get more competitive without him on the team.
Right. And he's 30 years old, and so he's not one of the young guys, but he's solid. And the other thing, too, is him having gone through – that was such a bizarre thing. First, he gets hit in the face, and then, you know, he ends up having the hit in the testicle, and then that all leads to a bunch of other problems. And then his back and everything, and so – he worked through it. I just still, every time I watch him play, I think about those videos where he's doing workout. And you said he's an MMA guy too, right?
Big fan. I don't know if he trains anything, but he's always tweeting about it.
Yeah, but he does all kinds of different training. I wouldn't be surprised if he does. But, you know, these things where he's on monkey bars and, you know, turning different ways. And we've seen him sliding and flying all over the field. And, you know, the other day, it was over the weekend, I think, there was a one that he went sliding in and he actually missed it. Mm-hmm. And we were so used to seeing him catch those. He's just been getting to everything. So, you know, and I'm not sure if he has plus speed, but he tends to, you know, get a really good jump on the ball. He's really good out in the outfield. And as you said, a plus arm. So, yeah, I just think you need this guy. And I think he's the one guy that's probably going to stay healthy all year just because of all the training that he went through. So, but, yeah, I mean, also you need to keep at some point, you know, you can't deal away everybody. And this is a guy we talked about sort of longingly at the beginning of the season, like, yeah, he's going to be gone. We were pretty sure of that. Now it entirely makes sense to me anyway that they hang on to Mitch Haniger. And, well, I don't know what kind of a leader he is, but he's a leader by example.
Well, and I don't know how you get better without him. I don't know how you say we are now a more competitive team. You've already done what your goal was with the farm system. You are a top five, depending on which publication you look at, you're number one, number two, number three farm system in all of baseball. So you've achieved that part of it. So the idea of trading him for prospects, doesn't make any sense to me. I would be livid if they did that. Hey, we got this prospect from the Yankees. We got this prospect from the Blue Jays, whoever. I'm like, who's helping the team now? You're supposed to be competitive. This is the rebuild portion of this is in place, hopefully, with the prospects that are going to mature and develop and become your core. You're going to add more unproven commodities that are a year, 2 years away from helping the big club. You're supposed to compete next year. Mitch Haniger helps you do that. And unless you somehow pull off a trade that nobody expects and you get somebody who's a current player who's better than he is and maybe younger, you can pull off something like that, okay. But if we're talking about, yeah, we traded him for these two guys and this journeyman major leaguer, that's no good. That doesn't help you compete. That's not about next year. That's about years down the road. So I just don't know where. And somebody brings up, well, if he doesn't want to sign here, you have to trade him. Well, okay, that's different. If they go to him to sign him to an extension, he's like, no, I don't want any part of that. I want to test the market, or I want to go somewhere else. Okay, well then he's forcing your hand. But if it's in your control and he wants to be here, you keep him here. To me, it's that simple.
Yeah, well, and right now, I mean, his on-base percentage, .315, great, not super with his batting average, but he's tied for fourth in the Major League Baseball with home runs. He's headed for 40-plus, 40-plus home runs.
Yeah, well, we'll see what he does. Don't trade him. Don't trade him. Yeah, you're exactly right.
They're not listening to us.
You don't think they're taking their cues from us?
I don't think so.
They should. We're going to come back, talk some football. The professor, John Clayton, will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.